We're going to pick up with what I expect to be familiar words, even if you have not been a churchgoer for very long, because these have been on signs in yards and billboards and things like that for much of the last 20, 25 years at the center of many public conversations. So starting in the 20th chapter of Exodus, then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on earth beneath, or that is in water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving to you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female slave, ox, donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You have probably heard at least one sermon on the Ten Commandments in your life. Failing that, you have probably channel surfed either late at night onto public access or on the radio dial and managed to hear one sermon on the Ten Commandments in those formats. And I am pretty sure if you've been living in Southern Illinois for any of the last 10 years, you have seen them on a sign in somebody's yard. And that, I think, is actually part of the problem with how we approach the Ten Commandments, is that we think we know them so well, that everybody knows them so well, that they're just assumed that we're getting them all right all the time. Right? I didn't murder anybody this week. I'm doing pretty good. How about the rest of you? I'm hoping everybody who's here murdered no one this last week. Okay, so far, so good. We're not even going to get into the part where Jesus takes these further. We're just going to live here in Exodus today. Because Jesus would say that if you've looked at somebody with hatred in your heart, you've committed murder. Not even going there. Not even, that's advanced Christianity. Like, we're back in basics. We're on 10. We're on Saturday Night Live and a top 10 list here. We tend to forget that these commandments come to us as part of a story. They come to us as part of a narrative. We are 50 days after the parting of the Red Sea. The people of Israel are at the bottom of Mount Sinai. Moses is going to the top of Mount Sinai. God is going to give them the Ten Commandments because they need some rules and some boundaries, because right now they are two-year-olds and mama is not in the room. They have been set free. They're not sure who's in charge. They're not sure how this is going to work. A couple chapters ago in this intervening period, they were complaining about not having any food. So there's manna from the wilderness. A couple chapters the other direction, you know, while Moses is up on top of the mountain, they're going to get their earrings together and they're going to build a golden calf and they're going to break one of the Ten Commandments before they even know they're breaking a Ten Commandment. When we study these things anthropologically, almost all societies come up with something similar to these. Don't kill, don't steal, don't devalue committed marriage relationships. Don't go after what your neighbor has. you know, those sorts of things. Tell the truth was theorized several years ago when Enron happened, the huge Enron scandal, that really that was just a very sophisticated way of bearing false witness, lying about profits and profitability and where things were. And that if we just worked our way all the way back to this very basic thing, we'd be fine. And part of the problem is that we do take these for granted. God is putting these in front of the people who will be Israel for a reason. And it's because they're not something we can take for granted. These are in a marked contrast to how the people lived under Pharaoh. Some of those are obvious. How about the day of rest? How do you think slaves get days of rest? I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen. I know in American history that didn't happen. Do you see the whole list of people who get a day of rest? You get a day of rest, and your male and female servants or slaves, and your animals, and even the resident aliens, even the immigrants in town get a day of rest. Why is that so hard? Well, I mean, think about it. Look at history. We are barely 100 years into the 40-hour work week. The Methodist Church comes out of the Wesley brothers' frustration with the fact that mill and mine workers did not get Sunday mornings off to go to church, and so they held evening revivals in the fields. Piece of their frustration was that the church didn't care enough to enforce that commandment either, which is why there's a Methodist church when they were Episcopal priests originally. These commandments are, as our Sunday school lesson pointed out, a gift to us. They're a way to structure our lives so that our lives will be better and our lives will be better together. But they are also a fundamental challenge to the way that we often do things. We don't rest well. As people, we don't rest well. And when we do rest, the next day we give ourselves guilt trips about all the things we should have done the day before when we were resting. We need that reminder. We need it built in, and we need it built in at such a level that God says, you know what? I'm the Lord Almighty. I made heaven and earth in 6 days, and I needed a break. Who do you think you are that you think you could just keep on going like this? There's a piece to the start of this where we struggle with the fact that God says, I will punish to the third and fourth generation those who forsake me, but to the thousandth generation, I will give blessings. Those who follow me, those who love me, those who keep my commandments. And we talked a little bit, well, we talked a lot in Sunday school because we talk a lot in Sunday school, but this chewed up a bunch of our time in Sunday school, appropriately so, that is actually how this works. Whether it's God doing the punishing or not, the things that parents do impact children for generations down the line. And we see it in our society. We see it in our neighborhoods. We see it in our schools. We see it in our healthcare systems. We see it everywhere. And so God saying, this is going to happen and I'm going to make it happen, may just be God saying, this is going to happen anyway. And maybe you'll take it more seriously because I say it's going to happen. And all of that gets at what makes this passage, this text, this Exodus experience so hard, is that historically and theologically, we pretend that at Sinai, suddenly Judaism starts, And the people of Israel are made a people. This is literally the date at which we chronicle Judaism starting is from the Sinai experience. This is how, this is the birthday. We've got Christmas for Christians, and yet Sinai for Judaism. That's how this works. How good are y'all at forgetting? Right? I mean, we don't just flip a switch and suddenly we're different. Suddenly we're new. Suddenly we're different people. We get a couple opportunities in life to kind of reset things. If you move towns, if you go away to school, you can sort of remake yourself. But the problem with that, of course, is that you can't escape yourself. So no matter what difference you want to present on the outside, you still have you with you. And so here at the foot of Sinai, the people of God still have slaves to Pharaoh with them because that's who they were 2 months earlier. Just 2 months earlier. And in that light, perhaps it's not surprising that they go back to doing what they know and they make an altar and an idol to a golden calf. This is, to me, one of the hardest sticking points of Christianity, is that we talk over and over again about being new creations, about having new life, about being born again, about being forgiven, about being washed white as snow, about all of these things. And I don't know that we ever actually experience that fully as human beings because we keep our stuff with us. We keep our errors, sometimes on replay loop in our heads, our most embarrassing moments. Our lack of confidence plays a reel behind us right when we need to be confident. Whatever we are insecure about, whatever we were insecure about when we were five, hangs on. And we have to figure out how to navigate it. We have both a president and a pastor in this town who struggled with speech. And they have had to work really hard. I remember Pastor Kim Lee Brown telling us in a Lenten service how much work she has to do to prepare to speak publicly. And we've heard that story about the president as well. And guess what? Probably every time they stand in front of people to talk, they hope it doesn't happen. After how many years? How much work? How many times? And I think that is one of our challenges for us, is believing that a fresh start can be true because we aren't able to give ourselves a fresh start. Country music says Jesus may forgive, but Daddy don't forget. It doesn't have to be Daddy, does it? I mean, we have been able to hold and nurse grudges. We have been able to hold and nurse our own failings and the failings of those around us into a very healthy old age that hasn't been healthy for anybody involved. And so this challenge in the wilderness, is for the people to start to be different. You shall have no other gods before me. The only God you shall have is the one we identify as love. Those who abide in love abide in God, right? That we define as holy, and we are to be holy, for God is holy. We will have no other gods before this God. Not paychecks, not size of our house, not the age of our car, not the wonders of the smartphone we have in our pockets, not anything else. For the Lord our God is a jealous God and wants us all to God's self. That's a contrast to just being Pharaoh's production tools, to be valued for who they are, for who we are, simply because we are, is the first fundamental challenge in the Ten Commandments. I don't know if y'all have ever had this conversation with your siblings at some point. Well, yes, I have to love them. They're family. Right? What if we just wanted to? And that is essentially the challenge in the first commandment, is to understand that's how and why God wants us. Because God loves us. We have graven images, idols. We make mock-ups and mockeries. The quasi-useless Bible trivia from Sunday school this morning that's on the cover of your bulletins is, why does Moses have horns? Yes, Moses has horns on your bulletin cover. It's because of a bad biblical translation. But Michelangelo made a statue of a horned Moses. It's all through artwork throughout, from about the 6th century to about the 15th century. It's related to a Hebrew translation of the word Karen, which can either mean horns or radiance. So we're used to hearing that Moses comes down off the mountain with his face shining. For about 1,000 years, the translation was that Moses came off the mountain with horns. There you go. And we stayed trapped in that for 1,000 years, limited and trapped. And so we make graven images and idols, and they exist today with something that's not quite the story of God trapped in it. And that's what God is saying, is don't get too stuck. Don't get too stuck. Don't make things too permanent, because I am moving. I can show up in a burning bush, people. Come on. Really? How do you think you're going to control me with paint or stone or wood or a 3D printer these days? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. We've made that about blue laws. We've made that about not being able to buy liquor or a drink. We've made it about not being able to buy a pair of pants or whatever it is. At the same time that we have required people to work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. At the same time that we really want to be able to go buy those things on Sunday because we didn't get it done on Saturday or Friday or Thursday or whatever it was. And we need a break. We, as the people of God, need a break. We need to rest. We need breathe deeply. And the only way we're going to do it is if God does it for us and says, I need it. Now, how many of you as parents tried to get your child to nap because, frankly, you needed a nap, which meant they needed a nap? Uh-huh. Does this commandment make sense now? You shall not kill, which is often translated, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not bear false witness. Well, we have a problem with that still, don't we? I mean, read the headlines. We haven't figured any of this stuff out yet. Covet. I mean, coveting is hard because we're trained that we should want more and better. But coveting also so often turns people into things. It turns our neighbor into somebody we're competing with, not somebody we're celebrating with. And that is a danger. I want what Dave has. And by that, I mean, I want the ability to drink 36 cups of coffee a day and still go to sleep immediately. I want the ability to eat a whole fried chicken and not gain a pound. That's what I want from Dave. That is what I really want from Dave. But Dave is a lot more than those things, isn't he? And so if I make Dave out to just be fried chicken and cups of coffee, I'm missing so much of Dave. So when I decide I want what somebody else has, that's eventually what I do is I turn them into a commodity. It's eventually what we do is we turn them into a commodity. And people aren't commodities. They can't be. And so here we sit with these Ten Commandments that are still a revolutionary way to live. And we've talked around it enough to make it seem as though just 70 years ago, we had it right and we've messed it up since then. Speaking of 70 years ago, that passage about punishing the kids to the third and fourth generation, how many of you have known a depression survivor? How many of you have gone through the washed tinfoil and the rubber bands and the twine and the string and the paper bags and newspapers, all of the things that were held on to for that moment? That guess who they got dumped on? They got dumped on the kids, by the way, in case you missed that memo. We're talking about going through them because we had to go through them. All of those things add up. And generations later, we still talk about behavior impacted by the Depression. There is power in the Ten Commandments that cannot be constrained to the past. The power in the Ten Commandments is their vision for the future. It is a vision for the day when the God of love is the only thing we worship and serve. It is a vision for the day when we don't have to make other representations to try to show what God might be like, because we have experienced the power, the presence, the truth, and the love of God ourselves. And we don't need to get close to it. We know it deeply and intimately. It is a vision for the day in which we don't sit here and go, TV preachers are the worst, right? Do not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. It is a day, a vision of a day that sounds like the 23rd Psalm, where the Lord leads us beside the still waters, anoints our head with oil, and our cup overflows, and we find rest. It is a vision for a day in which parents don't heap disaster on their children, and children honor their parents. And the community is kept intact across generations, and families are not divided and broken up by our actions or the actions of the world. It is a vision of a day in which we are content with what we have and able to celebrate with our neighbor what they have, not thinking, my, it sure be nice if I had that too. The Ten Commandments are aspirational, and we have treated them as though we had it right in 1952. I think our challenge is to become people once more who are newly freed for God's service in a new place and a new land, and to imagine them to be a gift that helps us take a fresh start, as hard as that is. I think that the Ten Commandments can be for us a hopeful statement, as they are for the people at Sinai. And I believe that when we finally get to Jesus taking them the next step, oh my, that's advanced Christianity. We will be ready to hear that because we understand what it is to love God, to love neighbor, to rest, to worship, and to care for one another. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.